Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
You're very welcome back. 51551, that is the text. Now, there's a new 10-part series called Geek Girl. It's released on Netflix today. It's for the Gen Z, and this will give you a flavour from... This is a clip from the trailer.
Geek. Noun. An obsessive enthusiast.
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
A socially inept or unfashionable person. My name is Harriet Manis, and I am a geek. But my entire life is about to change. And frankly, it's about time.
There it is. That's Geek Girl. It's a 10-part series, as I say. And Zoe Rocha is the producer behind it. She's Irish. It's in the set in the world, Geek Girl. Very close to Zoe's roots. So we'll talk about that. Good morning to you, Zoe.
Good morning. How are you?
Not at all. Not bad at all. Thanks a million for joining us from London, where you are this morning. Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
In
it's
good
great
form
to be
and everything.
And talk to you.
Oh,
yeah,
brilliant.
It's great.
Excellent.
It's really exciting to just sort of be able to say hello and talk to you.
Congratulations on this. This is a big deal. 10-part series for Netflix.
Yeah, I try not to think about that. At the moment, it's sort of gone out globally today at 8 a.m. And I'm sort of like trying to sit here and pretend that, yeah, anyone could be watching it in Japan, Dublin, London. Who knows? But no, it's quite exciting for us.
They're quite secretive with their figures. Do they tell you soon enough how it's doing, or what do you do? Do you sit there frightened, wondering?
Frightened, wondering, basically. They don't actually... It's really interesting with Netflix. They don't give you any... stats, they don't give you any data until probably around, I think, 27 days afterwards. They can kind of let me know where it's been landing, like whether it's kind of peaked in Chile, whether it's peaked in anywhere. And it's really interesting. And it's kind of what they do, though, with their algorithm is they can tell internally, like what the demographics are that are responding to shows. So
it's so precise. Who exactly is watching it. OK, well, we wish you well. Tell us about the story behind Geek Girl.
Geek Girl is a 10-part series based on a best-selling series of books by the novelist Holly Smale, who was actually spotted herself when she was 15 at the Clo Show Live in Birmingham and was catapulted from being this very kind of geeky girl in school to the next minute modelling for Gucci. And she sort of, even though this was meant to be this kind of wish fulfillment and this dream life for her, she still struggled to kind of find her place in school and kind of felt like an outsider in both camps. And interestingly, Holly had a late stage diagnosis of being autistic when she was 39, so very recently, and then realized this whole time she'd been writing this very kind of successful set of books about this character. She was writing a young neurodivergent girl. So that's kind of key to it.
So Harriet Manners is neurodivergent, but it's not part of the story, which is a nice way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one element of what makes Harriet who she is. But I think we made a conscious decision at the beginning not to make a show that was just the neurodivergent story, because I think that sort of ends up marginalizing certain sections of the community. And we wanted this to feel like something broad and commercial. And I mean, Oliver, I'm sure we've all had that feeling where we've all felt like an outsider at certain points.
Yeah, and it works, doesn't it? It helps.
Yeah.
Because you get to see yourself from, you get to see the world from a different perspective and... does that work for you? Are you one of those people that looks at it from an outsider's point of view?
Well, I think, you know, particularly, I think you mentioned earlier, like I've come from a very well-established fashion family. Like that was kind of in my DNA growing up. But because I was never kind of actively involved in that side of things, I think for me, I always saw it slightly with that detachment.
Very good.
And I think that's what's nice when you're looking at fashion. It's so hard for people, I think, to kind of relate to it sometimes.
Did you relate to it then when you look at it as an outsider? Because it wasn't something that you wanted to go into that business. Your sister Simone is there, your father, obviously, John Rocha. Looking at the fashion world, how did you view it? Is it just a kind of a fantasy escapism that we sort of need?
I think so. I think everyone wants a bit of joy now, right? I think we want to have something that's kind of positive and uplifting. And I spent most of my childhood going to these fashion shows, but kind of as a spectator and just loving the spectacle of it. So I think that's kind of part of what we wanted to present to the audience.
And you would have always also seen the hard work, the hard slog that's involved.
Yeah, it's really tough. Much easier to be a producer and be behind the scenes in TV.
Is it? Doesn't sound like it, to be honest. Because you, although it's a Netflix series, you did have, it's an expensive show to make, isn't it? And when you're dealing with high-end luxury, how do you put that on screen when you can't, you know, no show, no movie could afford the amount of high-end fashion that's required for putting something like this together?
Yeah, I think because we're, you know, we're obviously kind of a younger skewing show in the yeah. demographic that we were working on. We didn't have like a huge budget, but I think it was important that we served to the audience something that felt authentic. So I was really lucky in that when I first sat down with my dad when we'd had it commissioned, I said, "Dad, I'm making a show about fashion. Like this has to feel like it's going to feel real."
Yeah.
And we worked with a really experienced fashion consultant on it who helped us kind of access into lots of brands. So I think in episode 4, we see a scene where we have, I think there's 15 pairs of shoes all lined up, but that's actually £30,000 worth of shoes because we were loaned them by Gina. Yeah. So we have a lot of, we had a lot of clothes loaned to us throughout the production.
Do productions have to pay for that, or?
No, I mean it was a lot of goodwill, I think, and yeah, so we were very lucky.
And you have to treat things well. It's going to be nerve-wracking having that.
Yeah, you have a lot of insurance on it, and you kind of worry. And again, when you're the producer, it's your responsibility to make sure it all gets back okay and nothing gets stolen.
It's definitely a show for fashion followers, really, isn't it? Would we recognize, if you're a big follower of fashion, you'd recognize some familiar faces in Geek Girl?
Yeah, we have a lot of fun cameos in it, so. In the pilot, we have Stephen Jones, the milliner, who is cameoing at the front. We used his products in it. We have Val Garland, who is a very kind of well-known international makeup artist in it. We have Sadie Frost, that icon from the 90s. Yes. And Bimini Bamboulash, who did very well on Drag Race in the UK. So there's a lot of little kind of nuggets that pop up there.
Even those names kind of tell us this is total escapism, this show.
Yes. Yes.
Your dad doesn't make a cameo, but I believe his archive or parts of his collection are here somewhere.
Yeah. So actually to create there's a fictitious designer in the show called Yuji Lee, who is Korean. And that was one of the main challenges I think we felt was to how do you make clothes look like striking and organic on a runway that yeah. don't feel like cheap? And We I didn't ask him at the beginning because I thought, no, I can definitely look at other ways of doing this. And actually, in the end, my dad said, "Look, would you like to have access to the archive that I have of all of my runway shows?"
Wow.
So it was such a gift. We went to Portugal and we hand selected, I think there's like 40 pieces across the whole show. And they're the actual original runway dresses that we're showing.
Wow. So they're the original. They're yeah. precious pieces from the archive.
Yes.
They're getting this extra new life.
Exactly.
Charlotte Tilbury as well. I think her makeup is involved.
Yeah, Charlotte provided all of her cosmetics because, you know, backstage at all of these fashion shows, you would always have it kind of endorsed by a brand. So Charlotte sent us over 3 massive suitcases of all of her products. And again, that was one of those moments of trying to keep an eagle eye, Oliver, to make sure that no one was pinching any concealers and foundations. And I think we did get everything back to her. So she said she'd work with us again. So
that's a good sign. That's good. It almost sounds like you wouldn't have been able to make this show if you weren't there, able to tap some people in the fashion industry that you knew over the years.
I mean, I think it's one of those things that, like, it's the same thing you apply to every show. So you always find your new, unique way of approaching it. I think for this, like, these books have been tried to be made for the last maybe 10 years. They've kind of gone to various different producers. And I think the balance was actually probably with having my background in understanding fashion, being able to bring that, I think, gave it this weird little alchemy, which was needed.
Yeah.
But hopefully if it lands well and everyone watches it today and we do a second season, then we'll have brands approaching us to want to give us
exactly.
their stuff.
Exactly, so
is the
much
hope.
Easier, yeah.
Yeah.
But that you're highlighting the difficult job of a producer, which is, you know, to convince someone like Netflix to give you money to make the thing. So you're going in saying, "Look, I've got some industry contacts. This is how we're going to do it."
Yeah, it's a lot of kind of putting together that package. You know, it's so competitive out there in all of these industries, everyone working now, it's hard. And you kind of have to go in and give them all of those additional things for them to think it's a no-brainer.
Your husband is also involved, so it's a family affair all round.
He is, and I got to be his boss again, which is always delightful. Oh my gosh, always really nice yeah. in the house. Yeah, he's like, he doesn't normally kind of high-end drama and kind of more moving into film space. But I think on this one, we just felt like it was a very much a kind of a team collaboration. So, yeah, I think he enjoyed it.
Have you worked together before?
Yes, we did a show, another book adaptation called Flowers in the Attic, yeah, The Origin. Yeah. Yes. Very different book.
Not very different audience. Book, yes. And this seems to be your specialty, doesn't it? Turning books that may have been sort of big a couple of years ago, weirdly forgotten in a short space of time, perhaps, and then bring them to the screen and everyone goes, oh, yes, those books are incredible.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, everyone wants projects that are based on IP now because it's hard. There's so much content out there. You kind of need to have that recognizability to break through. And new books going out now are being kind of bought by studios for like, you know, £300,000-£400,000 before they're even published.
Really?
And we couldn't compete in that space. So for us, it's been a lot of going through and finding those books that have slipped through that we just really connect with and then trying to bring them to life.
And sometimes, unfortunately, they're buying the rights for books to make sure that no one else makes the film before them. And it's then you end up with the story buried in some ways.
Yeah, which is a shame. I think novelists feel that at the moment, you know, because they you take the money on that big deal at the beginning and it might not necessarily have that big kind of passion behind it.
So this was obviously made abroad. You're Irish. Are you going to make something here soon? I think there is something in the pipeline, is there?
Yes, we have a feature film that we are developing that was meant to start shooting in the autumn. Yeah, so we're kind of currently looking at locations at the moment. We've kind of looked at everywhere from up around Donegal down to Cork.
Oh, right. And again, the job of the producer, having to scout every element of the production, including where it's going to go. Can you tell us anything about the story, or is it an original thing, or is it set on a book? Or?
Oh, it's an original. It's actually a feature film that my husband wrote. But again, as you said before, it's finding those projects and bringing them back. He wrote this script, I think, 10 years ago, and it was on this thing called The Blacklist. And The Blacklist is they do it in Hollywood where they pull the kind of, I think it's the 100 best unproduced feature films that haven't been made. And it was kind of very buzzy at the time. But him being a writer-director, I think it was offered by a big studio who said, yeah, we'd love this, but we're going to get a big experienced director to do it. So he kept the rights to it. And now we've just managed to kind of pull that back together and actually do it in the way that he wants to, in a very kind of like a small independent Irish feature film. So it's really him going back to his roots.
That's a real passion project.
Yes.
And the two of you will work again together. So it's worked fine. That husband-wife working relationship. As a producer, are you a bit of a control freak?
Absolutely. 100%. Okay. You couldn't do it if you weren't.
Explain yourself.
I don't think it's being a control freak. I think I love having the overview of everything. I think I'm learning as I'm getting more experienced in it to work with people that you trust. And I think that's why, even as you said there, like working with Declan again, I work with the same costume designer quite a lot. I work with the same production designer. There's a shorthand and a nuance to how we can communicate, which I think has helped. I think working on newer projects, sometimes it's just I probably take on too much responsibility, but I'm learning to delegate.
Yes, Declan, I should say Declan O'Dwyer. I'm not sure I said your husband's name, but that's it. It's very tough being a producer. I mean, it's extremely early mornings to set everything up and on long shoots and so on. It's an exhausting time. How do you manage all of that?
I don't sleep that much. I've never
needed
to. No, I'm one of those sort of slightly mad people who sleeps like 4.5 hours a night.
Go away.
So, I don't know. It's always been the same way. I can't stay in bed. I get up really early in the morning, and that's kind of always been the most productive time I have. So when you're working on film shoots, it's amazing because you are on a set from 4:30 or 5 in the morning, which suits me perfectly. I'm not great with night shoots because I do want to be in bed by like, you know, as early as possible, at least chilling.
So you do 4 hours. Where are your four hours? So do you go to bed early, do them early and then get up early? What?
I get up really early. I'll end up going to sleep normally at around, I don't know, like 12:30, 1. And then I'll be up and awake from like, you know, this morning I was up at 5.
Do you not suffer constant exhaustion?
No, but I think it's going to start hitting me soon. I have Sundays every now and then where I have to go, this is my chill out day. But yeah, it's just always been that way.
So you believe in catching up on sleep?
Yes.
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 Sleep doctors are now screaming at the radio.
I know.
That doesn't work. Since you sleep so little, you must have time to watch things. What are you watching at the moment?
I mean, I think like the whole world, I've watched Baby Reindeer, right?
Yes, they have. I think I'm the only one actually hasn't seen it.
Have you not seen it yet?
I haven't seen it, no.
Don't watch it early in the morning. And I would say pace yourself through it. I watched that. I've watched the new Bridgerton that came out.
Oh my god! Yeah.
And my thing is, because when you work in TV, I end up just when I get home, I have to say it's my guilty pleasure. I'll end up watching things like Below Deck and really terrible reality TV. That's my guilty secret, which I've now just told everyone in Ireland. Yes. So Below Deck.
I mean, there's, you know, there's the bottom of the barrel, and then there's Below Deck.
I know. I know.
I can see the allure. Particularly, you don't want to be thinking about how it's made or anything. You're just
That's exactly what it is, because when I sit and watch something, it's actually that escapism of going, this is not what I do. This is just a very nice, pretty place in the Caribbean where there's some people with kind of overly dramatic lives, and it's quite amusing. And it is terrible, and I shouldn't tell people I watch that. I should come up with a better idea,
line for the future. You exactly. Get away with it here when you're talking to your own people. And Geek Girl, it's obviously aimed at the Gen Z teenagers, early 20s. Would you have watched something like this as a teenager yourself?
100%. I mean, I think that even when we were approaching this, we were kind of like, it's a guilty pleasure for, and I'm 41 now, and I think it's a guilty pleasure for a lot of women my age, men my age, that will kind of want to watch something that's just happy and joyous. But yeah, when I was younger, I was definitely into my kind of rom-coms and that kind of happy kind of storylines.
Yeah, and you don't have a jaded view of the fashion industry, which is obviously a testament to how well the family got along in the business.
Well, I think so, because, you know, you said earlier on and said, I've worked with my husband now a couple of times. Like, I've grown up with everything being very family. So it was so normal that was just what everyone did, that I've only ever really seen the kind of the positives of it. I'm very aware that that does put me in a really privileged position, because obviously my parents were doing very well. But I think they all approached it with that kind of that pure intent of wanting just to create something. And any success came as a byproduct of actually creating the art.
Yeah. Was it always a privilege, or did people always whisper, oh, that's John Rush's daughter? That might have affected you in a different way.
I mean, I went to university in Wales when I went to Trinity first, and then I left to go to Wales, not because I didn't necessarily want to be in Dublin. I love Dublin. But I think for me, I did at that age just needed to kind of spread my wings a little bit and define myself away from the family and just figure out who like Zoe Rocha was. I think that was really important, because yeah. You know, growing up at that time, everyone knew who our family were.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah, it was really nice just to go to North Wales, to Snowdonia, and just be like anyone else there, and just kind of
to be
earn
yourself.
My own. Yeah, and earn my own kind of relationships with people and what I was about.
So it was an important sort of thing to step away from the dynasty relationship. So on one hand, you talk about it as a privilege, but it is also something you have to find your own identity in.
I think so. I think anyone who's come from family. I mean, but it's not even just necessarily with fashion or anything. Anyone has to sort of define themselves away from what their parents are doing.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. How is your dad, by the way?
He's in great form.
Great.
He's really enjoyed the show. He came along to our premiere 2 weeks ago, and afterwards I went up and said, "What did you think?" And he said, "Oh, it was great." He said, "I always like it when they're just like happy rom-coms at the end." And he said, "But do you think my clothes look okay? Do they look current enough today?" And I was like, "Dad, they're brilliant."
I love how he still really cares passionately about that.
Yeah, that's, well, I think it must be so interesting. You've created these pieces back in like the 90s and the noughties, and then they're being put on a catwalk like today and styled today. But I think what was so lovely about it is, I think when people watch the show, they do feel like they are as contemporary as anything you'd see on the runway. So,
and what we're looking at in terms of fashion, the show is authentic.
Yes.
From here and there. Listen, it's fascinating. Thank you so much, Zoe Rocha. We wish you well and husband Declan O'Dwyer and that feature in Ireland. And we'll hopefully talk to you maybe when that comes up. But in the meantime, the 10-part series Geek Girl, it's on Netflix today. The best of luck. I hope they're watching it in Chile or wherever you find out.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Oliver.
Thank you
talk
so much.
Talk to you soon.
51551, that's the text. We'll take a break. TE.ie.